You're listening to the Illustration Hour podcast, an interview podcast where I talk to illustrators, art directors, and agents about the craft and business of illustration. My name is Julia Dufossé, and I'm an editorial and commercial illustrator based in Chicago. And I'm chatting with creatives within the world of illustration to learn about their process, the challenges they faced along the way, and how to succeed as an illustrator today. Welcome back to the Illustration Hour. I'm your host, Julia Dufossé. I'm so pleased to be with you again this week, and I'm really excited to bring you a new interview with one of my favorite animators working today, the wonderful Lori Rowan. You might already be familiar with Lori's delightfully tactile pastel characters and his inventive use of motion, but you might not know what it took for Lori to get there. And in this episode, that's exactly what we discuss. Lori started working in the animation industry 13 years ago, working his way up in small and bigger studios, creating animations for phone games, TV, and websites. In 2017, Lori attended the character design conference Pictoplasma in Berlin, and he realized he wanted to create original work for himself. So, for the next few months, Lori set himself a challenge to create one short animation a week that he would post on his Instagram every Saturday. It was simple, and it was an open-ended brief, but Lori quickly hit his stride. After a few weeks doing this, he created an animation that changed everything for him. It defined his style, his voice, and a direction for his future work. So in this conversation, we talk about Lori's thought process, how he planned this challenge, and why he thinks it was successful. We talk about Lori's work, how he likes to draw daily, how he gets inspired by things like bird mating rituals and Tupperwares, and how he handles working with big clients such as Disney, Google, Channel 4, and the BBC. So I'm calling this episode, Take Charge of Your Creative Career, because I think if there's one lesson that we can learn from Lori's experiences, it's that the power to create what you want to create is yours and yours only. And I want to encourage you to explore, experiment, and challenge yourself to find the one thing you want to express with your art. And just give yourself the opportunity to develop that thing. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Lori Rowan. Lori, welcome to the show. I'm really excited to have you on.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Hi.
Yeah, and I guess people who are listening might not know that this is actually our third time trying to record this, and hopefully this goes
well. Yeah, we've had
well.
A few internet issues.
Yeah, I have high hopes for this one. So I want to start with a simple question, and that is, how do you usually describe what you do when somebody asks you, somebody who's not in the design or creative industries?
I think usually I'm just quite self-effacing and say I make silly, wobbly characters that dance. And yeah, I think that's it. I got kind of told off by someone I was with the other day saying, you know, you always just make it sound rubbish whenever you describe it. But yeah, it's mainly character-led stuff, so colorful characters, and then I sort of work out mechanisms within their bodies and just try and make sort of visual tricks and loops. And it's just a kind of, I don't know, just a sort of just depictions of abstract, joyful acts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And 3D plays a big role in your work, at least
yeah,
in 3D, most of your work.
Yeah, it's 3D yeah. animation. I could just say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you do non-3D, right, too, sometimes?
I do, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's mostly sort of in the process for me. So like I make a lot of texture work, and I do illustrate everything by hand before I make it into CGI. And sometimes, I mean, not a lot of my stuff now actually in its final form is non-CGI. It's pretty much all CGI. But I'm getting really into things like lino cuts at the moment. I'm doing a lot of my texture work and kind of just trying to find little different aesthetics with linos, and I'm just really enjoying the kind of limitations of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you usually do that in Photoshop or more?
Well, the lino cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, literally kind of.
Oh, you do it by hand and then you.
Like
okay.
Physically, yeah. And then, you know, rolling ink on it. But then I do, I take that into Photoshop and I convert what I've made into brushes a lot of the time, and then kind of just using the stamps within that so I can build up like big complex patterns and stuff.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you're making like brush textures by hand and sort of using that to texture your.
Yeah. I'm not really using them as brushes so much as more as, yeah, sort of stamps and just kind of. Yeah. The randomized placement and that kind of thing. I like to take an element of it out of my control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. And working with 3D like you do, it's very precise in a way. So you'd want to add back some tactile and more spontaneous feel to it, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you describe yourself on your website and in general, you describe yourself as an illustrator and an animator. And I was wondering if, I always ask this to animators. I just talked to Robin Davey a few days ago.
Oh, yeah, he's a friend of mine. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And I was asking him if he usually describes himself as an illustrator or an animator, or if he just says animator and, you know. And he actually said he likes to describe himself as an illustrator who animates, but I was wondering what you say usually.
I guess I skew more to animation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the thing that people kind of look to me the most for. That's sort of changing. I mean, historically, I've always been an animator. I started out as an animator, but for years, that's purely what I did. And now, actually, a lot of getting a lot of my inquiries are about character design more so than animation.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I guess I would kind of, I describe myself as both. And I guess I do see them as distinct practices.
Yeah. I think what's unique about your work is that it could work both as a still image, and it works very well as animation, of course, but I think your style lends itself to being a still as well, because it does have it's a visually interesting, you know, some animation styles might not be so interesting without the animation part of it, I guess.
Mm. Yeah. And I think also, I mean, one of the things that my work's got popularized through Instagram. And in that kind of environment, it is a consideration that the first thing someone sees is visually engaging without having to be reliant on the motion to kind of reveal whatever aspect that is. And so, I mean, it's not something that I kind of consciously started doing, but I think it has sort of, well, not in the first case, at least, but I am aware of that now. And I guess it's just that, you know, that the motion is built into the physicality. I think when you look at the characters, you can kind of see what the intention behind it is, or the sort of the motion is implied. And I like that aspect of it.
Yeah. So I want to go back to when you started to animate, which was about, it was a while ago, it was about 12 years ago when you first started to work in animation. And at first, I think you were working for small animation studios, making just totally different stuff from what you do now.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about that time?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, that was kind of straight out of university, really. Within the year of being out of university, I was in my first animation job, and it was more or less a startup, and I think one of the things that defined it for me was the guy who ran the company had no interest in animation whatsoever, other than sort of being in the knowledge that The Simpsons is marketable. I think that was the basis he formed the company off. And so actually, I think it worked in my favor, because I didn't study animation at university or anything art related, really.
Yeah.
Media. Which had an element of production in it, but it was sort of more focused around documentary. And it was after university that I had the realization that you know, animation is something I'd always done throughout my childhood, but never seen as a serious vocation. I didn't think I'd ever have the luxury of having it as my job.
Mm-hmm.
And then after, sorry, it's a long-winded answer, but after working in a call center for a bit after university, I sort of realized that it was the thing I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I sort of trained myself how to be an animator by looking at job applications. And my first studio I worked in was one such application. I just basically just sat in a dark room for a while and learned everything on that list. And then, yeah, like luckily I was really naive, but so was my new boss. And so he didn't think he realized sort of the depths of my lack of knowledge, and I was able to get my foot in the door. And once I was there, you know, I could just sort of work up the ranks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But no, it was back then, I mean, I guess it was 13 years ago, maybe 14 years ago, starting that company. And it was, back then, mobile phone animation was a thing. So it's sort of pre-Wi-Fi on mobile devices, pre-smartphone. And, you know, you had very low poly screens. And what we were doing is we were just animating short, like 2-minute clips that people could download for like the equivalent of about $4 a clip, of like some rubbish.
All in Flash.
All made in Flash. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite cheap, nasty stuff, to be honest. But, you know, it laid the foundations for sort of learning what to do once. I wasn't particularly enjoying what I was making. There were some things, you know, we moved from the mobile phone stuff to television quite swiftly. We made, you know, we were lucky enough to have this amazing company locally who were making a sitcom, not sitcom, a sketch show for Channel 4.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really nearby. So I think we got that contract. And so, you know, we were animating this TV show quite soon into the career. But, you know, just by virtue of doing it every day, you get better. And so I sort of see my first job, I think I was there for just shy of 3 years. And that was, I'd consider that my university, really.
Yeah, you learned the basics of animation while working there because you had to kind of.
Yeah, flying by the seat of the pants. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, had deadlines imposed and just had to learn how everything worked really quickly.
Do you remember if when you were kind of learning all that stuff, were there books that you were using, or was it mostly just learning in practice, just what you needed to do at the time?
A lot of it was YouTube tutorials and that kind of thing, and like subscriptions to sites like Lynda. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Richard Williams animation survival kit.
Oh yeah, that's something that everybody who's an animator has mentioned.
Yeah, and for good reason. I mean, it's really comprehensive. I still refer to it now.
Uh-huh.
Like the guy's a genius. And yeah. It's I think anyone who ever sort of makes a walk cycle or anything will have referred to or like just copied what's in that book.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fundamental stuff.
Yeah. So I guess after a few years of working at that job, you started to be a little bit dissatisfied with the work you were doing, or?
Yeah, I was. I mean, it was not, I think at the time I saw it as a luxury to be in that line of work at all.
Yeah.
Which to a certain extent, you know, still do obviously, but I think I quite quickly, I sort of decided it was unrealistic to be doing something that's sort of tangentially linked to what you want to be doing and be creatively satisfied simultaneously. I don't think that was really on my radar for a while. And then I moved companies. I moved to another one. And my focus became less kind of character animation, more into just doing sort of tie-ins to pre-existing media. So I was working for good clients, you know, people on the lines of MTV and Disney and Nickelodeon.
What sort of work were you doing?
It would be, say, like a tie-in website or game to go with the existing property. It's all couched in those terms, property, you know, that kind of thing. So it was animating websites, really. That was the main part. Like, or like explore zones, which would be these kind of little landscapes you can move around and you meet a a Disney princess in the hallway should give you a clue about something. Like just kind of reiterations of that. And then that company went into liquidation and, yeah. And I went freelance and then began doing the same. So I can, you know, there was a long gap between kind of actually doing something that was, you know, creatively satisfying and having left that first kind of tickly bad job. Because, well into a couple of years into my freelance work, I was still doing that kind of work. But it was a trip to Berlin to a conference or a festival called Pictoplasma that just sort of made me aware that this wasn't the only thing that was going on. You know, you could actually, there was such a thing as kind of autonomy in the creative arts. And, you know, that is these sort of desires that I had put on the back burner to do something that was creative. I hadn't really sort of figured out what it was yet. But there was, you know, there is a, if you can find it, there is an outlet for that.
Yeah, you were mostly executing other people's visions at the time, so it must have
entirely
felt quite,
yeah. And I'd play around my own stuff in the evenings, but I saw that as kind of just it was all just kind of my focus was only building myself up in a very technical sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, but literally, if someone needed water to be in a scene, I could say, "Oh, I can animate some water."
Yeah. After you went to Pictoplasma, I guess that was in 2017, and you've talked about this in some of your talks that you've done since, but you mentioned that you set goals for yourself and you kind of started kind of structuring your personal projects in a way that you felt would help you achieve your goal of working freelance and doing the kind of work that you wanted to do, which was your own work and not just executing.
It wasn't really, I mean, it wasn't a detailed plan at all. It was just I think I had a tendency, you know, when I did do my own bits, it would be, I'd get obsessed with these long form ideas. Like I was looking through some old books of the day and I found this idea that I kept on returning to, which was this like floating island with a train that was just perpetually going around it. You know, two stops. And I like the idea that there was a poetic notion that, you know, this train that's just not really doing anything, just going to the same thing. And isn't that a metaphor for like just sort of the cyclical behavior of life? You know, just quite a dour concept. And that, but the irony of it is I just kept on going back to this one idea and I do it in line work and I do it in 3D and then I think, oh, I'll animate that. Or that become a short film. I just started doing this thing over and over again. Before I realized it, you know, it's kind of a year had gone past and my only personal project had been trying to get this train, which was a, you know, a metaphor about being inert, you know, and I wasn't doing anything. So I think that sort of led to me just thinking, okay, absolute simplicity. I'm going to have a project whereby my only stipulation is that I put something out that is self-contained, that I don't over labor to the point of never being able to release it. So I do it each Saturday and that's it. That's the rule. It gets put out on Saturday and it exists. Those are the two stipulations.
And of course, when you say put out, you mean,
put on Instagram.
On Instagram. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was the reception for those projects? I mean, you started week one, you posted your first, I guess it was a GIF or a sort of video on Instagram.
Yeah, it's like this little wobbly thing. So it's like a guy made out of three circles who just kind of, and the first one for that was like expediency was the focus. So I was like, how can I get something really fast that satisfies me? And I've always found sort of wobbly, squishy things funny. So I just made this little guy and then sort of put a randomized motion through him. So he's just wobbling.
And was the reaction to that immediately positive or
no, it's non-existent. Like, okay. Just kind of just sat there and then all right, yeah, that's the expected. No, that did nothing, but you know, it was kind of it satisfied me and I'd done it. And so it was about 5 weeks in when there was a notable change. So you know, I started, the ideas started to get a bit more advanced than just a wobbly guy
yeah.
within the first couple of weeks. And then these kind of, I don't want to call them visual puns, but, you know, this kind of started to develop this thing of there being a sort of a visual narrative through the components of the characters.
Uh-huh.
Don't know if that makes complete sense outside of the work, but so there'd be a guy who could flip its head, you know, and mm-hmm. there's one face on one side and then tilt it forward. And so, you know, the body has an unexpected behavioral aspect that reveals yeah. a different kind of anatomy. And then that became the sort of the benchmark. And then I did this sort of collapsing character. And then 5 weeks in, I did this one with a lot of concentric heads within a head.
Yeah.
That spins. And then that one, that was very sudden then. That got picked up within, you know, a day or so of posting it, and blogs started to get in touch with me, and I noticed my following on Instagram went up from a few hundred to a few thousand.
Did you have a kind of a grasp of why people enjoyed that particular animation so much?
Not in any kind of formal sense. No, I mean, I kind of, it made sense to me because I really got excited about it when I did it. It's just kind of,
mm-hmm.
I don't think there's, you know, I look at these and I don't know if there's any sort of quantifiable measure of success other than, mm-hmm. you know, it just stirs something. So, you know, I had a visceral response to it, and it was one of the few pieces of work that I created that I didn't immediately hate.
Really? Which, so you felt more excited posting that one than the other ones you had made before? Or?
Yeah, it made sense. And I thought, this is something. Like, I'm not entirely sure what. And, you know, but, you know, I'm a kind of nervy guy. So as soon as I put it on, I assumed. I've got this strange thing is whenever I put something online,
uh-huh.
the moment I hit send, I think that's awful.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know why those things coincide. But,
yeah.
But in this case, you know, I didn't.
Yeah.
So that was the measure of success for me, I guess. but yeah, I mean, I think it's retrospectively, once I've kind of developed a distance from it, if I look back on it now, I kind of, there's a sustained thing with that particular one. And it is the one that sort of started to define my aesthetic.
Yeah.
I don't think it goes before that one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How would you describe your aesthetic, since you're speaking about it, the aesthetic that you kind of went in the direction of at that point?
I don't know.
I guess what was the difference with what you were doing beforehand, like in the first few posts that you did for that project?
Yeah. There was a focus to it, I suppose.
Mm.
And there was something within the concentric image like that. I think it led the eye in a better way. And I think maybe it was a bit more informed by the things I've been reading around the time, like, you know, Bauhaus stuff. It was kind of, that's definitely got an influence on me.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I just guess it hung together. And I think it was just the moment of clicking of just various different things that I've been into that kind of, you know, what informed my sense of humor, I guess, you know, although this is an abstract thing, there is an element of humor there in the absurd, I suppose.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And it was the way those things came together. So it's the way in which it kind of, that mechanism that, you know, that delivers the humor is also kind of coalesces into a pleasing image, you know. Then there's something about the way in which it draws down to the focal point of that smaller head. The colors I started using, that just started to make sense to me. And
I was going to mention that. Yeah, you have a very distinct color palette that kind of, yeah, emerges with that one too.
And I think color had always been a real struggle for me before that point, not directly, you know, correlating with that specific image, but I did have trouble before, and I'd be much more comfortable designing in black and white. And focus was on form rather than color at all. But then I think it was around that time, it was the first time that I started to actively take pleasure in finding a kind of nice combination of tones and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just, and, yeah, it was a culmination of things. I think that's what made that the one.
Do you remember how you first got the idea for that one? Or like Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about the process, like, of creating something like that. How did it first start to take shape, and then how did you, you know, execute that? And
I think for that one, that particular one, that was quite immediate. And I think it had just been off the base of kind of just always thinking about it, really, like kind of just in terms of, you know, this personal project thing had taken over my mind. So I was just kind of every idle moment, I was just thinking about the way in which things move.
Yeah.
And how that can be built into a form. And so it was just, I think by that point, I was just preconditioned to just have these kind of ideas pop into my mind. So that one was quite abstract. But in other cases, you know, I think what I do generally is I just ensure that I have time to waste and watch videos of things I find inspiring. Like, I mean, I've spoken about it quite a bit, but sort of bird mating rituals and that kind of thing. Like, I like different modes of kind of defined behavior that's non-human, you know, but it is kind of societal in a way. And it's, and then
there's a lot of interesting movement. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That has a sort of intentionality to it that you can kind of, that is simultaneously kind of alien to you, but you kind of, you pick it up, you know? And I think that's why it's particularly appealing, is like, it's just really funny to watch a bird dance on another one and try and kind of, you know.
And I think one of your animations that you made was directly inspired by a bird mating ritual, actually.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. Yeah, so there's one that I've got that's like these concentric bowls, like really similar to the head, I guess. It's kind of a dance.
Oh, yeah. I remember
that. Where
these
like bowls are a pair of trousers.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got this like gobstopper-like character that's in the middle of it, sort of propelling it, or being propelled by the trousers. And what that was just kind of filling myself up on a sort of, you know, visual diet of all this sort of stuff. And then one day I was just using some Tupperware, and it was just the culmination of those ideas. Like Tupperware, and then this kind of exotic dance, you know, and just immediately like these ideas glide into this thing, which was basically an avian Tupperware dancing pair of trousers.
Yeah. How long did it usually take you to finish that kind of thing? Like when you were doing that personal project, would it take you like a few hours or more?
No. It'll take me a couple of days.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the most part. Occasionally, like if there's an idea that can like distill down really, really easily, you think, oh, that's a satisfying notion that can be resolved really quickly. You know, I think at best a day. But, you know, I think at the longest, well, probably like a week. There's one where these two characters sort of swap an arm between one another.
Yeah,
that was labor intensive.
Yeah.
Because there's an element of improvisation with it as well. I kind of had the basic idea for what I want it to be. I came with the idea of, oh, it would be really nice if they kind of had this, you know, symbiotic relationship between these two characters sharing a limb. You know, what would that look like? And then as I started to play with it, realized that, you know, you could make it sort of half a dance and half a competition. Have a load of mixed emotions with it, and then it's really fun to sort of improvise in slow motion around that, really. I know they're going to dance, but the choreography of it sort of reveals itself to me as I'm going. I guess that's kind of one of the distinctions between personal work and client work, is have the luxury of not having to hit any specific points. You know, you can experiment and see where it leads you. So yeah,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh no, I mean, I can, if I'm not careful with myself, I can, you know, I could take something for 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Forget.
I was going to ask if you ever had trouble, like, during that time, you know, if you ever had trouble sticking to the plan.
Yeah, the plan went out the window quite quickly. I was, like, really strict with myself for quite a long time. To the point where, you know, I'd be staying up until 6 a.m. because it had to be. Because I promised myself I'd post this thing on a Saturday.
Right.
Or, you know, being in the car and getting a sort of remote desktop computer thing so I could just do the finishing touches while I'm a passenger in a car. you know, things like that. But then that kind of, I became less militant about that when I realized that it was starting to destroy my life for something that is relatively trivial and other people probably wouldn't notice. And I'd already established what I wanted to do as well. It was a case of kind of, when I started this sort of simplistic project, it was because I had nothing but the belief that there was something within me I could pull out. You know, I hadn't really taken the time to investigate what that was, other than I knew I had the, you know, the want to do it, whatever it was. And then by the time I'd got enough of these things out, and, you know, I'd laid that, sound ridiculous. I read that roadmap and I just sort of knew, you know, I knew what this intangible thing was. So I didn't feel the need to sort of castigate myself and, you know.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Like it must have been very like a relief to finally have a firm grasp of what the direction was and to feel like, oh yeah, this is what I want.
Yeah, it was a real relief, I think. You know, no, yeah. It was, and is, you know, and it's still developing. Still don't have a real sense of what it could become. It needs to become something else now.
Yeah. I'm
conscious of that.
Yeah. I was going to ask that. Have you stayed satisfied with this style? Because of course it has gotten you a lot of work, a lot of recognition, but I also know from just personal experience that it's really hard to commit to one thing, and sometimes, I mean, that's not how creativity works, you know.
I think so, because it's sort of couched in what naturally occurs to me. So it's, you know, I've been, something that I didn't do for a long time was just sort of embrace my naturalistic way of drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this massive preoccupation with being clean. You know, I'd have these sketchbooks full of like really detailed kind of cross-hatched pictures and some life drawings on, but I mean, which is all good and valid, obviously, but it's kind of, that was the preoccupation with this thing of perfection as opposed to kind of exploration, experimentation.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's taken over now. It's kind of my drawing is very disposable, and it's just in the pursuit of an idea or just kind of just to identify kind of, you know, one line or something within it that changes the character of something. And in that respect, I think that gives it the ability to grow.
Mm-hmm.
In that I'm not trying to impose too many, you know, rules on myself. There's not too much that sits outside of, you know, this internal world that I'm building. So, you know, it all comes from just stream of consciousness drawing, just constantly, every day, you know, I aim to every day at least, you know, just spill out whatever's in my subconscious onto a page and then, you know, just try and sort of experiment with like, well, what will something simple, like what will a dog look like if I was to draw a dog, you know?
Yeah.
It turns out like a satellite dish with trousers and sort of uh-huh. Winkle picker shoes. So yeah, it's kind of, I think as long as I get a sense that it's sort of growing, and there's a lot of places that can grow too as well, because it's at the moment the focus is still very much just characters. You know, they sit in empty space for the most part. It's just a character,
yeah,
and then a background color.
Yeah, the environments. I guess there's more there that you could do. Yeah.
Yeah, there's all kind of. I'm starting to sort of play with world building and more landscape sort of stuff. And, yeah.
Well, it's already so time consuming for me. Animation is just a crazy occupation because it's very laborious, like the whole process of doing that. And it just seems to me like I would just be frustrated all the time. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's probably why I am. Yeah. Yeah. No, it is laborious. But you know, there's a great pleasure in that as well. If you're into it, I suppose. And one of the processes I enjoy the most is kind of making a nice rig for my characters. And it wasn't until I kind of, that's something like, you know, rigging is just kind of when you set the bones and sort of make sure that's, you know, the skin of your character stretches in the right way. And, you know, just the mechanism to move the whole thing, basically. And
yeah.
That was something that I, you know, formally I never enjoyed really until I started to kind of treat it like, you know, building a robot or building a kind of a contraption. So underlaying most of the sort of the personal bits I do is, you know, these characters have one function. And then, you know, so like if you see a character who's like functions for its head to spin and then, you know, torso to move in and out, it couldn't then get up and walk away because I haven't built the aspect to do that. You know, they're kind of,
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I see it as kind of, yeah, tinkering and inventing, I suppose, as opposed to kind of.
I think because you also have the kind of like the sketching, very loose sketching, stream of consciousness drawing that also allows you maybe to get freer than in the later stages of your work where you're rigging and you're animating.
Yeah, I tend to keep most of the kind of, you know, the freewheeling kind of creative ideas in that initial stage. Though obviously, like, the later stages will inform what it ends up being just by virtue of spending a lot of time on that. But yeah, I try and keep those things distinct. Like I'll try and lock in kind of what the aesthetic is really early because I don't want, I am a CGI artist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that would be the aspect that's not a category or the, you know, that's not a genre in and of itself. That's just a kind of a delivery mechanism, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want it to be defined by that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be concept orientated. Otherwise, it's lifeless.
Yeah, yeah. And so when you sketch, do you usually do it, do you focus just on that one task or do you usually do it when you're doing other things? I'm just asking because it seems like you have a really kind of relaxed approach to sketching that, you know, it's sometimes hard to have that actually because you can be very self-critical when you're sketching. You were talking about that earlier, but do you usually sketch like at a set time or do you just do it whenever you feel like it? And do you do it while you're doing other things?
No, I start the day with it. So it's the first thing I do. It's a kind of loosening up exercise. And I listen to music, but mostly kind of ambient stuff that doesn't require, you know, nothing lyric based,
mm-hmm.
really. Or something that's kind of got high momentum, something that will get me a bit excited and get me into, it's all about finding a flow state, really.
Yeah.
But I am, you know, I'm not, it probably does give the impression that I'm relaxed while I'm doing it, but I'm not. I'm just
okay.
Kind of, I throw a lot away. So it's a volume exercise, you know, and a lot of it kind of, I think for the first part of it, it's always frustration. Where I think like, am I ever going to have another idea? I sort of go through this. Really,
so you do go through that. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, constantly. Yeah. That characterizes most of the process. And then the kind of elation at the end of a couple of hours when you have 10 good minutes and something comes out, which is that, you know, could lead somewhere.
How long do you usually spend doing the sketching in the morning, I guess?
It's variable, but I try to kind of try to have an hour.
Yeah.
This isn't every day, you know, because a lot of the time as well, more recently, I've been working a lot of commercial work that just doesn't really allow for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that'll be kind of when I don't get to do it in the day, I will do it in the evening.
Uh-huh.
And that, as you described, is kind of that is in the lounge with my wife and TV on in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
In a chair, you know, with it on my lap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you sketch in a sketchbook or do you sketch on loose paper?
Sketch in a sketchbook. I've got an A3 sketchbook.
Uh-huh.
Like hardback.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I sketch in that.
Okay. And do you always sketch with the same pens or do you just, you're not really bothered about that?
Not particularly. I've got kind of two that I use. I've got I use a mechanical pencil.
Uh-huh.
And I use a brush pen.
Mm-hmm.
And the brush pen is for when I'm feeling confident.
Confident, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I know when I'm feeling that I can really kind of be gestural with it or, you know, when I'm feeling particularly energetic, I guess I'll just kind of whip that out and really indulge in the kind of the curves you can get with it, you know. Just
yeah.
It's always got a different energy to it when I use a brush pen. But
it's unpredictable too. Yeah.
Yeah, and I like that.
Yeah.
That kind of, it feels like a bit of a battle, and you get, I like kind of having something that's semi unexpected on the page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to talk more about your current kind of like the work that you've been doing more currently. You've been working with a lot of commercial clients, and that's the bulk of your work, really. You, you've had a few editorial commissions as well, right?
Here and there, yeah. I did one for Bloomsburg.
Yeah.
Which was somehow related to Brexit. But no, for the most part, it's stuff that kind of is or bears a kind of resemblance to my style.
Yeah. Do you find that most people come to you having seen one of your, I guess, one of your videos and just saying, I want something similar to that?
Yeah. I get shown a lot of mood boards where I'm one or two elements of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there'll be kind of stuff that's sort of it from that world around it. Most of my work at the moment comes through Nexus, who I work through. I'm a director on their behalf. Uh-huh. So, you know, if they bring me commercial projects through that, and then I do get other inquiries. Sort of for the last few years, I worked alone, but I've started to work with them now.
They're an agency, right? Or are they more like a studio?
They're both, I guess. Yeah, they've got their own kind of. They've got their own animators and, you know, very, very professional team, credible artists. And they represent about 30 directors worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think, yeah, they're both. Yeah.
And what's some of the work that you've been able to do while working with Nexus, or some of the work that you've really enjoyed doing?
I've just recently, I did one that was a really short job, but it's for a Chinese mobile phone manufacturer called Oppo.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Yeah, that. So I made like a 10-second advert with these birds in a nest.
Yeah, I saw. I think they commissioned some illustrators to do some still stuff as well during that.
Okay, yeah, they've got they were really open to interpretation with that. They really embraced, you know, people's style wholesale. People were really allowed to play with that. Like Nexus put out 10 shorts.
Uh-huh.
And everyone was absolutely distinct from the other and entirely, you know, the artist or director that was behind it. So that was really nice. It was just kind of complete trust within that. You know, very short time frame in terms of the app itself, you know, 10 seconds to get a concept across. But,
yeah.
You know, we were able to bring a bit of levity into it, and it was just a really nice process. And then the other bits I've done, you know, I'm not at liberty to talk about it too much because there's stuff that isn't out in the public yet, but it's it's more design orientated. So I'm doing less kind of hands-on animation myself and just kind of directing that, which is a whole different thing.
Have you had particularly bad experiences working with clients? I mean, I know you've worked with a lot of brands, and you don't have to name names or anything like that, but has your experience overall been pretty good?
I mean, it's been a long time, so it's been a real mix.
Yeah.
And you can kind of, you, it's a lot of the time I find it's about temperament.
Yeah.
And you can gauge quite quickly whether it's going to be a cooperation or a battle, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really nice when you get the sense of like everyone's just driving towards making something good, as opposed to everyone's driving towards making themselves heard.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, you know, I think people want things to succeed. So invariably, you know, it's quite good. Other times, there's the classic things of people just sort of changing the goalposts, you know, suddenly a deadline's brought forward by a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Or one moment everything's fine and the next moment it's not.
Yeah.
I have had like some funny experiences with it, I guess. I remember years ago I was doing one for a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And they were awful, really bad. They just kept on changing this idea, and it was like really ambitious what they wanted to do in a short amount of time. And I think we were, as a studio, quite determined to forge a relationship. So we were, you know, bending over backwards to accommodate all these ridiculous things they wanted. Until finally my boss just kind of said, oh, look, it's not worth this.
Yeah.
And I remember I was dealing with this producer who's a nice guy, but you could tell things were getting handed down to him, and he just had to kind of, you know, bully, basically.
Yeah.
And I remember him putting his boss on the phone, who's this guy who's kind of, I guess he was convinced that he could get anyone to do anything. And I remember him just sort of saying to me down the road, like, on the phone, he's like, right, we need this weekend, so you're gonna have to work the whole weekend, capiche? Something like that. And he went, you know, I don't want you to give me this, 110%. I want 150%, you know?
Yeah.
Can you do that for me? We came to you because you're the best. And just kind of, you know, trying to compliment but bulldoze his way through this thing. Oh, God, it was.
I've also heard a common thing that really frustrates a lot of people, not just animators, but is people who come to you with, you know, very specific idea of something they want you to emulate or... I guess you were talking about mood boards. Sometimes the ideas are very specific, and maybe they might even be referring to other people's work, not your work.
That happens a lot. Yeah, it does. And I mean, it kind of a quick thing to... I mean, an element of that is understandable because, you know, they're coming to you because you're the one that's able to give them the visual language they're looking for. And so they can only talk to you in terms of example. And so I think it's fair enough if they're saying, we like the energy or the levity to this piece.
Yeah.
Not if they're saying, can you do that? You know, that's when it becomes a problem. And that's a really hard thing to navigate, actually, because, you know, you want the job and you don't want to be rude enough to say, are you asking me to copy?
Yeah.
So you just have to kind of sidestep that a bit and just not. I mean, I've seen people do it. I've seen people sort of brazenly take someone else's style. It's happened to me before. I've sort of seen this thing come out, and I'm not going to say what it was because
of someone copying your style, or
it's come up before, and kind of something you know got released and on that day about, you know, 10-20 people got in touch with me and said, have you seen this thing? And that was really nice in terms of people could recognize that this was borrowing quite a lot from, you know, what I do. And having been on the other side of that, I recognized what had happened. Like, I must have just been on one of these mood boards.
And then
whoever was actually creating things just far too literal.
Yeah.
With the inspiration. It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
Because there's only so much you can do to safeguard against that.
It's not strictly illegal, or it can be argued around quite a lot.
I need to look more into this, but someone said to me it's kind of 5 points of difference.
Oh,
basically.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I think if you can identify, you know, so people change things by a factor of five to be completely okay, but the essence of it can still be exactly the same.
Yeah, that's
might
very interesting.
Be true. I don't know.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah. What usually inspires you, I guess, when you're starting a commission, or you have no idea where to go and you're kind of looking for inspiration, what do you usually do?
I usually surround myself by books. So I've got a lot of art reference books and stuff. And books on sort of ceramics. I look at a lot of ceramics. Stuff that's not related to what I'm doing. I find the best kind of thing to jump off, because you'll have an idea that's less obvious, or just fill my peripheral vision with enough stuff that can spark some kind of idea.
And I guess it keeps you from directly copying or borrowing too much from someone who's making work currently.
Yeah, and because I also don't think it should be, you know, I don't I think it'll get, your frame of reference gets very small if you know, look at the sort of little subculture you're in. And, you know, I'm not looking to make artwork that's about CGI. So, yeah, I kind of cast the net as far as I can, really. So just read and just look at imagery or listen to repetitive music. Mm-hmm. And just panic, really, until an idea comes.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
So I know you recently... You welcomed a baby in your family, and you. I wanted to know how you've been navigating that with working freelance. I guess you. I guess first of all, like, where do you work usually? Do you work from home or not? And do you have a set schedule? How does that all work?
Chaotically, like, to be honest, at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we. My daughter is 6 weeks old at the moment, yeah. So it's all. It's all really new. And we were in hospital, all of us together, for the first week of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of after that, it was very disorientating. So it's kind of been, I was on, you know, I'm self-employed. So I was kind of on paternity leave that could end at any point should a commission come through. I basically wasn't fighting any work. But if something came through, I wasn't going to turn it down either. So yeah, I think I've been back into work for about 3 weeks now. And I work at home at the moment. I've got an office and studio at home. And it's, I mean, it's at the moment, it's the luxury of having your own hours. So everything's kind of, no, I don't really have much of a schedule right now.
Yeah.
The sleep's a different thing as well.
Yeah.
I don't have as much. Just made me safeguard my time a lot more. You know, I think there's less, I'll stare out of a window for less time now.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm more conscious that things have to get done in the finite small bit of time that you have, you know. But going forward, there has to be a plan in place. So I have got a studio in the town I live in, Worthing.
Yeah.
That I haven't been going to recently, but will be soon. So I'm going to take my desktop computer and everything and shift it over there and set up a dedicated working space and then be a lot more you know, rigorous in keeping it 9 to 6, which is what I did previously.
Uh-huh.
So I'd keep office hours previously, you know, Monday to Friday, 9 till 6.
Yeah.
And then let that spill over a bit if I was particularly into something.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think for the sake of sanity and having a healthy household.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to be a lot more a lot more formal in how I'm doing it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it can be challenging working from home, I bet, because I guess you could just stop working, and if there's a need for you to help out with a baby or you're going to have to do that. And that's distracting.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. I mean, it's right now it's very nice. You know, it's kind of, I mean, my main job is changing nappies.
Yeah.
So, you know, I will be kind of working. I'll have a client call and then I'll run out of the room and change a nappy.
So are you responsible for your daughter during the week or something? Are you solely responsible or no?
No. No, my wife is here and, okay. But, you know, we share as much of it as we can.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you think it will be helpful to, like, work outside of home?
Yeah, I do. And I will. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have this studio and I will be, we haven't quite decided when that will be, but it'll be soon. Nothing.
Well, there's a sort of coziness from working from home that I guess I would be scared of losing personally, but also there's the other aspect of it, which is it allows you to separate your life much more, and I think that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I'll still have the studio at home. It'll just be whichever one, wherever my main computer lives, basically. It's just kind of, will be my de facto office. And because that, you know, I require that for the bulk of my work. But seeing as my hobby and a lot of my relaxation is also what be categorized as my work, which is a really nice position to be in. You know, I'll still want a room to come to in the house and like do these liner cuts or just to draw or
yeah,
or test some idea I've had or just, you know, see if something works the way I envisaged in the software. So there'll always be two spaces, I think. It's just whichever one that I go to the most.
Yeah, yeah. Before we transition to more rapid questions, or I guess like small questions, I wanted to ask you if you have any advice that you would give creatives who are starting out today and who want to illustrate and maybe animate like you do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, trying to think of the things that I struggled with the most when I started. I guess it's like important to identify what you want. I mean, I spent a lot of time, I guess, you know, I was an animator first and foremost to start with, but, you know, I had a desire to make illustration that was more my own. So I think a big thing was trying to just identify what it is that you do, you know, and not seek to emulate what feels prescient or is going to be fashionable. Maybe, you know, maybe incorporate an element of that, but don't be defined by it, because it won't come too naturally, I don't think. And also there's a lot of people that do that already. So I guess kind of just give yourself the time and be diligent with drawing and finding a style, or however you reach that. There's the obvious ones, like just be polite, be nice to people. Don't write people emails asking for help and then just end the correspondence there and
yeah.
Not say thank you and stuff, which happens a lot, you know, and it's quite off-putting. If you're going to contact clients and so on, just be aware of what kind of what you would want, you know. I don't know.
Would you recommend that people kind of do what you did, which is like kind of set yourself some, I guess, some deadlines to post stuff on Instagram when they're trying to figure out what they want, really?
Like, I think
kind
so,
of personal
yeah.
Project. Yeah.
Because there's no, you know, what's the jeopardy, really?
Yeah.
It's, I think you can only, it can only be a positive thing. It can be nothing, or it can be a positive thing. And for me, you know, it's kind of, that Instagram account existed for about 4 years before it did anything.
Yeah.
You know, I was putting stuff on there. If you go down my Instagram, you'll see all the sort of sketchy, murky drawings that I was doing, you know, like taking pictures of a sketchbook with a flash on, you know, for a long time. So yeah, there's nothing to be lost to just trying and putting things out and seeing
if
people bite, you know, other than maybe a bruised ego if you're susceptible to that.
Yeah.
Which I am.
You know? Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. I think it's really good to sort of impose some kind of rules on yourself as well.
Yeah.
Because no one's going to until you kind of to arrive and you know, in a position where other people are demanding it of you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably good too. I mean, you also did this for a finite time, right? The thing where you were posting every Saturday, because it's also hard to sustain that in the long run. And I think probably you shouldn't do that anyway, but how long did you even do it for? Like a few weeks, right?
I think it was probably like 10 weeks.
Yeah. That's
something
that's
like that.
Lot. Yeah.
But like I said before, it's good. Yeah, I mean, that got to the point where, you know, my ideas got more ambitious, but my time frames didn't change. So I was staying up until like 6 in the morning, you know, to finish something, which is, that's unhealthy.
Yeah.
Really. So yeah, I guess don't drive yourself mad. I mean, it's kind of, I had done another project years ago like this. I did this thing called 100 Days. Where I did an illustration and then wrote a story based on that illustration.
Every day?
Every day.
Yeah.
For 50 days. I managed to sustain 50 days of it.
Yeah.
And it was great in terms of you know, ideas started to flow and kind of I felt a creative freedom I hadn't done for a long time. But I did lose some friends.
Yeah.
Because I just became rubbish.
Yeah.
And preoccupied and distracted all the time, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Daily challenges like that. I don't know. There's a point of diminishing returns too, I think, when you're doing them, where it starts being like more about doing this thing every day and less about the quality, I guess, or I don't know.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. And that's definitely true for me. I think that's the point where it started to stop really after this sort of 10 weeks. I realized it was becoming that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just this. Yeah, it was a burden really. More than anything else. And I guess recognizing when you've achieved what you wanted through it.
Yeah, you had a pretty clear idea of what you wanted, I think, from that, also from the personal project, which you got in the end.
Yeah. What was that? I don't know.
I think you were looking for what you wanted to do, for what your style was going to be and what you were going to do that was uniquely yours.
Yeah, that's true. And that's much neatly more, you know, encapsulated than I would say it.
I think that's what it was, right? Because you were...
Oh, no,
you
totally.
That is it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then off the back of that, you also, I'm sure, got some clients because your work started becoming kind of like more popular on Instagram. A lot of people saw it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, I mean, when I was, you know, before I started that, I was working as a freelancer, but it was as an animator.
Yeah.
You know, in the terms that we described before of just kind of a jobbing technical animator.
Mm-hmm.
And now there is an element to that. You know, I still do a bit of that kind of thing to keep afloat. But the vast majority of my work is now orientated with the kind of thing that you'll see.
Yeah.
You know, on my Instagram and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
All these wobbly characters.
I guess to transition more into, you know, the kind of quick fire questions, I have a question off the tail of that is, do you have a sense of what you would like to do, I guess, in the future? Is there something that I guess you haven't done yet or a direction that you want to take your work in? For me, I kind of think of your work as like maybe you would want to make it physical almost.
That's definitely a thing.
Yeah.
And kind of working towards that. I mean, I've got an exhibition next year. I've given myself a long lead time to just make a room full of physical things.
Mechanical or just still? Yeah.
A mixture. Probably predominantly still, because I'll be doing it myself. You know, maybe some kind of mechanical showpiece. I've got this idea that I've wanted to have a really long leg that you can pull out of a wall.
I'm sure that would be great.
That's it, really. And then it just sort of crawls back in.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
So I want to do that. And I want to make sort of wearable things. I want to make giant wearable things that people can get inside and play with, and it'll change their physicality, you know.
Yeah.
I'd love to design playgrounds.
Uh-huh.
I think that would be an absolute dream.
Yeah, that would be cool.
But I think before that is more sort of long-term, long-form, short narrative stuff.
Uh-huh.
By which I mean like a 10-minute film, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And start to figure out what my characters are like, you know, if they had to deal with dialogue.
Yeah.
Which I think I might be against. Mm. I'm deciding how I feel about that at the moment.
Well, they make little noises, your characters, sometimes, but yeah, I've never heard them talk. Yeah.
Bit Mr. Bean like.
Yeah.
So they should probably stay like that, really, I think.
I don't know. It could
I'd subtitle
be kind of
them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind subtitling them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
But I think, yeah, it might be a little bit too naked with the voice or, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the kind of experiment that people won't see.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, basically, that'll be for me.
Yeah. Do you have favorite animators? Or is that not something you really...
Oh, no, totally. Yeah, I do. Don Hertzfeldt is always... I've watched a lot of his stuff. That was really formative. What was it called? Rejected.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I saw that at university and that sort of blew my mind that people were doing that kind of thing. I really love Adventure Time.
Yeah.
I think that's great. Let's think. Like computer game animation, I take a lot of inspiration from.
Uh-huh. Like which games, for example?
Like Mario Galaxy.
Yeah.
Things like that. I think that's really, you know, there's like a million ideas a second going on, that sort of thing. Love that. There's a guy who'll be speaking at Pictoplasma next year. He's called Will Anderson.
Oh, okay.
I think he's brilliant. Like really funny, short narrative videos. Mm-hmm. Like Jack Sachs, I like his stuff. Julian Glander.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's really good. And he's also working in comics a lot. And I think his sense of humor is fantastic. And I think he's just a really confident voice, like someone who knows their own mind. And, you know, there's a brevity and a sort of lightheartedness to what he does.
Yeah.
I probably look at comic books more than animation.
Uh-huh.
I suppose there's a lot.
Like what kind of comic books do you
go back to? Like Chris Ware is...
Oh, yeah.
It's probably my top. I've actually got I've got a drawing by Chris Ware next to my monitor.
You do?
Yeah. So it's always directly in my eye line because I was really lucky a few years ago when I was in Edinburgh and he was doing a signing in a bookshop and for some reason no one was there.
That is lucky.
So I got a few minutes and he drew this picture. And it's basically a little caricature of himself at a drawing table looking confused with the words like Jesus Christ written in. It says to Laurie, very best, let's see where. So I just cool. Keep that as a, you know, a little reminder that like even he, well, you know, he did kind of in most of his interviews and stuff, he'll talk about just kind of how arduous he finds the creative process.
Yeah. He's very self-depreciating as well.
He really is, yeah.
Yeah.
For like who in my opinion is one of the best artists working, you know.
Yeah.
It's sort of take a lot from that. So yeah, like Jimmy Corrigan and I just got his new one, Rusty Brown, which I've only just started. But it's already brilliant.
That's really cool.
And then a guy called Richard McGuire did a book called Here.
Oh yeah, I know that one, yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. So it's all kind of, you know, things occurring in the same space over millennia.
Yeah, yeah.
John McNaught, mm-hmm. He started to bring more dialogue into his work now, but for a long time it was just kind of, I guess, you know, tone poetry and just a lot of ripples and puddles and,
yeah,
you know, the changing sunsets, hues and so on. Dan Cooper.
Mm.
I think that was the first kind of alternative comic book I ever bought. I went to Liverpool on a day trip because I grew up in a small village in North Wales where a little bit of a cultural vacuum.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, went to this comic book shop when I was about 13 and it was the first time that I saw that people were doing things that weren't just Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And got this comic book called Dan and Larry. And I remember buying it because I hadn't read it yet, but you know, it's just an idea that this was something a bit more complex.
Yeah.
This was something that I aspired to understand, you know, and I didn't quite. And then when I started to read it, I realized it was a book about a robot in his 40s and a sort of semi questionable, well, no, actually like outright kind of pedophilic relationship with a 12-year-old duck. which was really interesting.
I haven't read that one.
And then Michael DeForge, like he's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So Ant Colony and like I discovered him through the Best American Comics. You know, they do the collections.
Yeah, they're great little collections. Yeah.
Yeah, and they had one called Canadian Royalty. There, where he sort of describes all these fake sort of rites of passage of Canadian royalty.
Mm.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. A lot of people mention him on the show, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah.
It's almost universal. Like, almost everyone will mention him, actually.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah.
He's amazing. He's brilliant.
Yeah. He is.
But and he's really prolific as well.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
You mentioned some of your art books that you like to surround yourself with before. And as a last question, I'm just curious if you have like what those are. Some of them, I guess, some of your favorites.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of, you know, they're not great books. It's like in terms of, you know, I haven't got kind of very expensive sort of well-curated books, but some
no,
of them
actually, but yeah. Neither do I. Yeah.
Okay, good. But like something I look at a lot is, have you heard of Mingering Mike?
No.
He's what people refer to as like outsider art.
Okay.
And he's a guy who built a whole kind of record musical career in his head.
Oh.
So he just designed album cover after album cover of
oh, that's great.
Like soul
like
music.
That.
Yeah, and he'd even make the records out of cardboard, like cut
oh,
discs
I,
out
I,
and
I like
sort
that
of inlay
a lot,
them.
Yeah.
So yeah, the book's called Mingering Mike, which is what his stage name was.
Oh, that's
even
great.
Though I don't think he ever recorded anything. I look at his stuff a lot. It's got a like, lovely naivety to it. A book called New Wave Clay by Tom Morris. I look at that a lot, and that is, as you'd imagine, you know, it's contemporary ceramics. I take a lot of influence for that, just like thinking about organic textures and that kind of thing. Like a book I've always got open is the Collins Encyclopedia of Animal Behavior, which is literally just a catalog of, you know,
that's yeah, that's great.
What animals do to one another. Design for Children is something I just bought by Kimberly Burks.
Oh, okay.
That's really nice. Yeah. Like toys and sort of practical things like high chairs.
It sounds like really, that's something that's really calling you also.
What, design for kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got one to test out on now as well. So, you know,
yeah,
it's fortuitous. Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, because they like to play more than, you know.
And I think your characters have this kind of humor that could easily be interpreted by a child, I think, also. Because it's not, you know, it's not something that would be offensive. It's something good-natured. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't put anything questionable in my stuff.
Yeah.
I used to, you know, I used to kind of like have a massive preoccupation with kind of just being a bit, I don't know, you know, I grew up being a massive fan of Chris Morris and
Brass Eye
and stuff. And so I just wanted to make everything just kind of jagged and horrible.
Yeah.
And, but that's kind of, that's tamed down now. I've only had a couple of times when I did a couple of art fairs and, you know, I got invited to do them. And it's a strange thing because I just, at the time I hadn't really done much print work. And so, you know, you were saying earlier that the work sort of lends itself to still imagery as well as animated imagery.
Yeah.
And that's what I did for one of my art shows. I just literally re-rendered a load of frames from animations and made them into prints.
Yeah, yeah.
But felt kind of like an imposter being there, to be honest, because I was, funnily enough, I just got into lino cutting. And so that was the only bit of sort of organic stuff I had. So I had these lino cuts that were one-offs.
Yeah.
And then all these CGI print-offs. And then I was sat next to someone who was just an expert lino cuts.
Yeah, yeah.
Artist. I was like, oh, shit. You know? So,
yeah.
But, the really long-winded point is I had, to legitimize myself, I had my animations playing on my iPad.
Yeah.
As a way of sort of saying, this is primarily what I do. And I got the benefit of seeing kids watch it and I had a kind of a small group of kids sort of cluster around the table and a couple of real nice moments when, you know, I could watch this one particularly like demonstrative boy came up and, you know, his dad was just about to pull him away, but then saw how much he was enjoying this stuff. And he was laughing at all the cue points that, you know, had a sort of intention to them. And I was like, it was a really nice moment. Like, oh, it works. You know, it's...
Yeah. I can absolutely see that.
It's universality to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So, yeah. In terms of books as well, Wilderman. There's a by Charles Frieger.
Wilderman?
Yeah. So Wilderman with two N's. And it's a folk costume.
Oh, okay.
So he's recreated these kind of like hill tribe folk costumes and stuff. And it's,
I could see that, how that would, yeah, also be present in your work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I go back to this one book I go back to a lot when I'm feeling like I need a bit of inspiration. That's The Third Policeman by Flann O'Brien.
Oh, okay.
Not an art book, but, you know, a book.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of, I was thinking about this the other day, and I think I can sort of trace back my, sort of the nature of my animations and sort of the way in which I like to sort of embed systems and things to his way of writing.
Really?
In this particular book.
I haven't read it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a recommendation.
Yeah.
It's my favorite.
I will. Yeah. That's really cool. Well, Lori, thank you so much for, first of all, for recording this or trying to record it three times with me.
You're welcome.
Took a lot of time out of your schedule. And second of all, for being on the show. I love your work. And so I'm really happy that we got to talk, and I'm sure people
so
will be really interested.
Oh, great. No, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
And that was my conversation with Lori Rowan. Remember to check out the comprehensive show notes for this episode listed in the show description below, and to check out Lori's amazing work. If this helped or inspired you, please share the shows with others and let Lori and I know. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good and creative week.